In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
This is the I Spy Radio Show.
You and I have a rendezvous with destiny.
Keeping an eye on big government.
We the people tell the government what to do. It doesn't tell us.
The trouble with our liberal friends is not that they're ignorant. It's just that they know so much that isn't so.
And now, here is your host, Mark Anderson.
If it was all about public health, then officials would not shut out science that went against their orders. They would instead welcome and embrace such science, glad to be proved wrong. Because if it was about public health, then the public's health would come first and their orders would come second. But instead, we've got a situation where the orders are preeminent and sacrosanct. They must be obeyed, even when and especially if science, actual science, runs against them. You'll hear things like, the vast majority of medical experts agree. So, science is not a democracy dependent on majority vote. In 1,000 scientists, 999 of them could be wrong, and only one right. It's the one who's right that matters. There was some huge news that you probably missed, and if you did catch it, you were one of the rare and well-informed ones. The editor-in-chief of Germany's Bild newspaper, that has 1.4 million daily subscribers and is Europe's most popular newspaper, issued an apology last week to Germany's children for spreading fear and panic about COVID over the last 18-plus months. He said Bild's coverage was like poison and, quote, made you feel like you were a mortal danger to society. We persuaded our children that they were going to murder their grandma if they dared to be what they are, children, or if they met their friends. None of this has been scientifically proven. He also noted how moderate voices who attempted to offer calmer perspectives on the pandemic, quote, were never invited to the expert table. And he urged readers don't believe this lie when encountering alarmist proclamations from the government. A government that uses fear as a whip is driving you to something. Undoubtedly, you've heard about the latest surge of COVID cases, which the government is blaming on unvaccinated people. Imagine for a moment the FBI in the 1960s was putting together crime statistics, but they want to blame blacks. So they stop counting crimes if the person is white. Well, all but the most severe crimes committed by whites. But if you're black, they count all crimes, even misdemeanors. And lo and behold, blacks are committing more crimes, despite being a smaller portion of the population. That is what they are doing right now with COVID data. If you have a vaccine and get COVID anyway, a breakthrough case, they only count the most severe cases, those who die or end up hospitalized. But if you're unvaccinated, they count you even if you have sniffles. A government that uses fear as a whip is driving you towards something. People had stopped taking the vaccine, so whip up more fear and use the power of government to force you to take it. Because it's not about public health, it's their orders that mean everything. I'd like to welcome now Mark Thielman. He is the superintendent of the Alsea School District in Benton County and a candidate for governor. Mark, I want to welcome you to the show.
Well, it's good to be here. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Let's start with the kind of the high level topic here, running for governor. How did a superintendent currently serving a small school district make the decision to run for governor?
Well, it started 2 years ago, but it was solidified with the advent of the COVID shutdown and then the ever-constant goalposts moving. And I've done policy for 10 years, and the legislature worked a lot with senators in both parties. And so I was familiar with the legislature, and I've had many a meeting. And when I say many, you know, probably half a dozen at least with Governor Brown. That's a lot for most citizens. Met with her with the Timber Unity, did PERS reform. Worked with Tina Kotek, Peter Courtney, and others. And so, to me, I had a unique perspective that most people don't get in just how dysfunctional our current leadership system is and really how one-sided it is.
Yes.
And then working with people that were more like-minded, they're pretty beat down and, you know, they get overwhelmed. And so I was like, I was very effective in the legislature because I had limited time and I would show up, be very efficient, and I was able to maneuver rather effectively. And would often be asked back to testify on things. And the piece of it is that's when it kind of clicked for me. I thought, you know, in this climate, Oregon needs a certain kind of leader who can not only talk to both sides, but live in the heads of people on each extreme. And as a school superintendent, if you're going to be effective, you have to, you're going to try to reach 100% of your parents, and parents represent the same kind of slices that you see in the broader state community.
And of course, dealing with parents, they all think exactly alike, right?
Oh, gosh, no. And the thing is, that's the beauty of it. So I tend to err on good business and good education happens at the individual level, not at the collective.
Yes.
There's collective things we do, of course. And so you have to be able to bounce between both, and you have to be able to listen and validate and be open. And there's not a lot of open people up in Salem running the state government or in the state agencies. And there's tremendous pressure to conform to whatever the narrative is. So what happens is otherwise very intelligent, super smart people, even science people, medical people, they get caught up under that political pressure. And if they say something scientific that doesn't fit the narrative, they get silenced and pressured or threatened. And so what they do is they acquiesce. And then that's what the problem with that is, you get great conformity, but you get really lousy policy. And after 30 some odd years of this, that's what we have. You know, they haven't solved affordable housing. I've been hearing about it for 3 decades. Homelessness is worse than ever. They haven't expanded the Oregon middle class base. Buying a house is harder than ever in the history of Oregon as of today. I mean, I can go on and on. And all of those issues and those circumstances fall squarely at the feet of the Oregon state government and its agencies and its leaders.
Well, absolutely. And I gather from what you're saying is that you would have handled the COVID crisis very differently. And how would that have looked?
The first thing is, I'm a biology major. I've done research and science work. I just have had a life of reading science. And even when I stopped teaching and started administrating, I always applied science into everything I do, even when I was a small farmer. And keep data, and you go where the data tells you. And sometimes the data leads you in a place you don't emotionally want to go. And, you know, I've had that happen in science where the results did not end up as I anticipated, and you have to reconfigure. You have to, like, okay, what does this mean, and did I get something wrong? And in order to do that, you can't politicize the process. So if you politicize the process, then you end up reading in that political outcome into the results. And so when you're setting policy, you have to look at the problem, and then you have to talk to everybody who has different opinions around that problem. And then you chart a course that says, okay, now that I've gotten all this information, how do I set a policy that incorporates like a net and covers as many issues as possible to create as many wins as possible while still accomplishing the outcome? And you can do that with COVID. That's why we stayed open in ALSI. I had to work behind the scenes, a lot of political leveraging to help facilitate the rural exception that Governor Brown granted. We were able to stay open. We just started K-12. You know, we did 2 weeks of K-5, and then we phased in the rest of the kids. And it worked. And we were able to run school safely.
Right.
No cases of COVID tied. So the thing
I'm sorry, I'm going to have to interrupt here. We are talking with Mark Thielman. He is running for governor. You can find out more by heading to Mark. That's M-A-R-C, mark4oregon.com. We'll link that up on iSpyRadio.com as well. Coming up, we're going to drill down into his specialty, schools and education.
It's not just a show, it's self-defense.
And welcome back. We're talking today to Mark Thielman. He's the superintendent of the ALSI School District in Benton County and candidate for governor. And Mark, I hated to interrupt you there, but you were discussing how you would have handled COVID very differently than what the governor did. You had started to say that you had kept schools open, and yet not a single case of COVID was traced to your school. Why don't you go ahead and continue your thoughts there?
Well, and that's the point, is we did real research. I read as much scientific research as I could find that was outside of what OHA was providing. And, you know, studies in Israel, Sweden, Denmark in particular, some from Great Britain, and a couple out of China. Obviously, they were the first to deal with the issue. And so there were some real themes there that began to come out. So when we set our safety plan up, we made real strategic investments, and then we communicated those investments to our parents. And that caused parents to start believing in the plan. Wow, this little school district really cares about keeping my kid safe. And so parents began to put pressure on us not only to open, but hey, we want to have our kid in school and we want to keep them in school. We had a few parents who were nervous and they kept their kids out, but within a month, all the kids were back.
Hmm.
And what's really special about that is that's a relationship that I want to bring to Salem. That we have to have a relationship between the governor's office and the people of Oregon. As a governor, you're here to represent everybody, just like I was here to represent all perspectives regarding COVID, from people who were highly afraid to those who were saying, you know, it's not a big deal. And that's quite a breadth, as you know. And our job isn't to pick one view over the other. That's what our current governor does. And, you know, my conclusions are the only ones that matter. And anyone who agrees with me, you're great. Anyone who disagrees with me, I'm going to call out in a letter and send it out, you know, to all superintendents and school boards. And the whole point is we can no longer afford to do leadership that way. So I'm running a unity campaign, just like we ran a unity safety plan in ALSEI. And so what the outcome was is we had one safety plan, and it was the same safety plan at the end of the year as it was the beginning of the year. And that was not the case with all of Governor Brown's ongoing changes in metric.
Nope. It was change the goalpost constantly so that you have no means to plan for anything. You're totally at her whim.
Yeah. Let me tell you why. Because when you virtue signal instead of really delve into the science and you surround yourself with people who only continue to repeat your virtues, we're going to keep people safe from COVID. We got to do a good job with this. And pretty soon you got a metric so restrictive that no counties can open. And you have misrepresented the virus itself and how it behaves, even though there was a mountain of evidence telling you how it would behave. And so, but don't worry, we're going to hold these things and everybody's going to do a good job and schools will be open by October. You remember all that? And of course, I was like, what is she doing? There's no way, based on the science, there was no way. So then we get all the way October, ALSEI doesn't have an outbreak, and believe me, the correspondence, you know, substantiates all this. Then suddenly there's pressure on me. I'm the bad guy. Mark Thielman's making us look bad because ALSEI does not have an outbreak. See what I'm saying?
Yes.
How did we become the bad guys because we kept school open and showed that schools could be open safely?
Yeah, but that's what it's because you exposed the lie. That's the issue. That's the problem. You know, she was so much into governing by tyranny. And just as an example of this, this is an article from the Acton Institute back last spring commenting on the governor closing not just of schools, but of online charter schools. And it says this, quote, online schools which have the potential to provide full-time education to the thousands of students and parents who have chosen them were being forced to provide similarly inadequate studies. I mean, to me, that is just typical socialism. We'll drag everyone down to the lowest level, forcing equal poor results rather than equity of opportunities that leads to excellence.
Why would she
shut down those online schools?
Well, I can tell you why, because she thinks online schools are set up in an unfair way because they are supported by for-profit curriculum provision companies. And I've heard it from her own mouth. And the thing is, she has the naughty list and the good list. And the thing is, you're in a pandemic, and the only schools who were fundamentally prepared, and that included the online program here in ALSEI, were ones that had experience in online education. And what did she do? She throttled them because there would have been a mass exodus to those programs. And then she passed a bill that said next year, because you get paid on the higher of 2 years in school funding. So if you have a windfall of kids, because they, you know, those programs did grow, you know, it's not like they didn't take on a couple, you know, a few thousand kids each. They did. Well, that's a lot of money. Went at $8,000 a kid. So they said, well, you don't get to keep that money next year because they were under the impression that COVID would go away. And they didn't want $140 million going to these virtual charter schools because that would have been reinvested into making them even better and more available. So they wanted that money for their friends in the public school system, the people who either were less capable or very slow to provide education for kids under COVID, if you recall. And so the thing is, you're talking about socialism. I'm talking about the way Governor Brown goes about setting policy. And the way she does is, I reward my friends and I punish my enemies.
Oh, absolutely. And that's classic socialism. I want to just squeeze in one other quick question here. Did that same order Did that impact private schools or private online schools, you know, where the rich kids go?
No. But she did shut them down, too, if you recall. Now, she has a little less control. You know, she can send OSHA to them, that kind of thing. So like a lot of the small private schools, my daughter was in one down in Eugene, you know, they never wore masks. It was hilarious. And, you know, I picked up my daughter and I never said a word, even though in my school we were wearing masks because I was a little bit under the spotlight compared to that little Christian school. And they never had a COVID case. And the beauty of it is this is what I'm saying. And when I say never had a COVID case, that was tied to the school and none of the kids got COVID. You know, obviously there were a few parents in that little school that had it, but everything was controlled and everybody was fine. And I was so blessed that all of my kids of school age, my two daughters that are still in school age, were able to go to school. My daughter Jordan came here to Alsea with me. My daughter Katie went to her middle school, Christian school in Eugene. And then, you know, which daughter didn't get any schooling? My highly special needs daughter, Molly. The Eugene School District literally abandoned her.
Wow.
The second she was not capable of functioning online. Well, she's severely autistic. She has cerebral palsy. And, you know, she needs a one-on-one intense aid in services. And so
it is just embarrassing how our school system is failing kids. It really is. All right. We do need to take a break. Coming up, we'll be continue to drill down with Mark Thielman, superintendent of Alsea School in Benton County and candidate for governor. You can find out more by heading to markfororegon.com, markfororegon.com. And welcome back. This is the iSpy Radio Show. We're talking today to Mark Thielman. That's M-A-R-C Thielman, T-H-I-E-L-M-A-N. Mark Thielman, he is the superintendent of the Alsea School District, which is in Benton County, southwest of Corvallis, and he's a candidate for governor. And Mark, just to pick up a couple of things from that last segment there, this was on your website, and I kind of find this surprising coming from a school superintendent. It says that you support school choice and stands up for all students and family. That's, like I said, kind of a surprise.
I appreciate you bringing that up because I don't know why that's so surprising. You know, we talk all the time about, you know, we need to reach 100% of students. And no one system or one option can ever reach 100% when you're dealing with human beings. I'm 51 years old. I've lived my life. I've seen it. I see how that works. I've got 9 children. They're all different. No two are the same. I've never ever shied away or chastised people who wanted to homeschool other than to encourage them to, you know, take it seriously and do a good job. Always extended an open arm for alternative type school settings. I mean, there's a myriad of them out there, which is why I've always been a fan of, and eventually came to lead a charter school. And I even worked on legislation back in 2010 with Bruce Hanna and Arnie Roblin, who were co-speakers of the House that year. Democrat and a Republican on open enrollment that was passed. And I helped advise in that legislation back in those days. And I was excited about it because I said, you need to create flexibility for schools regarding kids transferring back and forth so that there's some flexibility that kids can move around without having to be told you have to stay and fail. Mm-hmm. And that open enrollment, you know, it was around for a while, eventually sunsetted. But it sunsetted partly because we chartered here in Alsea, and every time they tried to get rid of it, I would go up to Salem and raise Cain.
Do battle, yeah.
But, yeah.
I need to squeeze this in here. Like any normal person, we were absolutely stunned that Oregon's governor removed the graduation requirement to demonstrate proficiency in math, reading, and writing to help students of color who don't test well. And this got national headlines. I mean, that is not just about kids failing schools. That is our entire education system failing kids. And I mean, shouldn't we be instead working harder to improve kids' education, not just printing diplomas that mean nothing?
Well, it's the same mentality that Colt Gill used to get rid of letter grades temporarily during the first COVID shutdown. By the way, Alsea School District gave letter grades in spite of that edict. And what it is that there is no missed learning, because we were told this at the beginning of the year in our superintendent's meetings by ODE very clearly, you will not, you know, basically they're saying, you know, we all know that it's not missed learning. It's unfinished learning. And one of the ways that you can keep that, you can get on the trolley and go to the land of make-believe and actually try to make yourself believe that is to remove all accountability. Okay, so we have to remove all accountability because we don't want the people of Oregon to see just how bad we've harmed their children and their education. Because if we did require those things, it might shine a light in a bad place. And then they all get in a room and they don't allow any other views in. And then they all go around the room and say, well, you agree, it's a racist system and that this accountability thing is a harbinger of white culture. That's what they'll say because I've been in the meetings. It's unbelievable. And the comedy of it is I've worked with all kinds of diverse kids of all cultures, creeds, and colors. And I see large common threads, even kids that come from other countries that haven't been fully acclimated into America yet. I see common threads from parents. One, that parents tend to like their kids and love their kids. And I've never seen parents not want their kids to work hard and engage in school and do their work. Most parents, the vast majority, want that. And to say that any form of hard work or accountability is assigned to this color and not that color is insane. They cannot be engaging with diverse people and believe that in real life. And so,
no, absolutely. For us, you know, it's just almost a backdoor insult to people of color that apparently your kids are too stupid to learn. I find that shocking.
I don't treat anybody like that. And, you know, I just had in-service this week and reminded staff.
Yeah.
I just
absolutely think the governor's actions in that regard are absolutely shameful. So real quick, I want to deal with a situation that you're currently dealing with. This has to do with mask mandates. And we were made privy a series of emails between yourself, school officials, and state officials. And it starts off with you writing to staff and parents, letting them know about the option as stated under law, that if they do not want to wear a mask, their kids to wear a mask, there's a possibility they could get a waiver via ADA exceptions. A state official then writes back a rather confrontational email, essentially shaming you and saying that you were spreading misinformation. Talk to us about this mask situation and dealing with the state here.
Well, the mask situation is similar to what we had before, but the problem is they didn't, in my opinion, they did not think through the policy very well, because they're saying that masks will be required during compulsory time, which is regular school hours, but they're not required for after school sports practice or after school activities. That's a local control thing. Well, in order for that to make sense scientifically, the virus would have to know only to maximize its danger only during compelled school time. And, you know, I've written correspondence to our professional association on that. I asked for a meeting with superintendents only and not our guard dogs from ODHA and ODE always in there because we can't talk freely. We're not allowed to talk freely. We're only allowed to talk in terms of the narrative that they give us. And so that's frustrating because now we can't engage in the realm of ideas. And so when they came out and said that you're leading information, they were trying to tell me that I had done something wrong, and I responded very clearly. Not only did I not do something wrong, you're telling me I did something wrong, and you're not telling me what the wrong thing is. And to me, it's just insane. It's unprofessional.
It's absolutely insane. And I love how you put this. You say it's not what the majority of experts believe. It's do the parents believe masks create a barrier for their children, and that's what you as a superintendent have to address. I just absolutely love that, and I think you made the right track on that. Mark, unfortunately, we're up against the clock. I want to thank you so much for your time today.
You bet, and thanks for having me. I really do appreciate it.
Oh, I am sure we'll have you back.
It's more than a show. It's self-defense, the I Spy Radio Show.
And welcome back. We're talking now with Dr. Henry Ely. He's the founder and executive community director of the Energetic Health Institute based right here in Portland. You can find out more about them by heading to energetichealthinstitute.org, and we'll link that up on ispyradio.com as well. Dr. Ely, it's great to talk to you again.
Oh, it's always good to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. We'd love to have you on for your common sense approach to medicine, which seems rather rare nowadays, and because you explain things so well. And I'd like to start off by talking about with some of these newer developments that have been happening here. The official data sources have been wrong pretty much from the get-go, and they've also, even worse, have manipulated data to make things appear worse and even flat-out lied about data since pretty much the beginning of this, overstating the deaths and cases, jimmying the numbers of hospital beds so that they can say that the system is being overrun. And at the heart of the number of cases, you've got a flawed PCR test, which now admittedly can't tell the difference between flu and COVID, and which will no longer be used starting in December of this year. In addition to all of those lies, now with this latest outbreak, we again have no reliable data because a couple of months ago, the government decided they would no longer count breakthrough cases and at the same time told testers to lower the PCR cycles for vaccinated people versus a high cycle threshold for unvaccinated, which can only lead to false positives. So, of course, it's going to look like the unvaccinated are causing all the problems in new cases right now. So let's break down what's happening because it feels like we're into the next round of fear mongering. Given the bad data, given the flawed testing equipment, how do you know whether or not there is genuinely a spike in COVID cases?
Well, it's a great question and one I hope most Americans are asking because there is no way to know. One of the things that we've had a number, several senators and several county commissioners do is put in Freedom of Information Act requests to get the cycle threshold data so that we can say, hey, you know, let's start with basic logic. If the CDC is saying that they won't accept anything over a cycle threshold of 28 for to evaluate breakthrough cases, then that should be the new bar for everything, just across the board, so we can compare apples to apples. One of the things we've been trying to do is get the data on every positive PCR test so that we can see what percentage of those cases are actually above a cycle threshold of 28, because the great likelihood is that those are false positives. And if we can do that, we can start to correct the data, just like we saw happening in Alameda County and Santa Clara County. They did a soft audit on death certificates, and they found on their soft audit just removing the obvious things that shouldn't have been counted as COVID deaths, the car accidents, the gunshots, things like that. They reduced death certificates by 22 and 25%. Respectively. That's how off we have been in our data, something that my team has been covering since day one. So when we're looking at breakthrough cases, I think it's important for the audience to know that the CDC did stop tracking this intentionally on April 30th of this year. They only track hospitalization and death breakthrough cases. And there's I can give the public the numbers on that right now. There's currently 1,587 reported breakthrough deaths, and there are currently 7,608 reported hospitalizations post inoculation, so where the vaccine failed to protect. When we go down to the state level, though, we see that there's over 150,000 reported breakthrough cases, and that's at this very jimmied, like you suggested, cycle threshold value 28. So those numbers would be even higher if they use the same standard that they are still using for the infection of the PCR and determining infections at 40. And, you know, that because that would include all of the false positives. So what they did on one hand for the audience is for infections, the cycle threshold's at 40, which invites a ridiculously high number of false positives. But what they did for the breakthroughs to make it seem like the so-called vaccine is working is they dialed down the PCR to 28 on a cycle threshold. So it makes it look like, you know, it's doing pretty good. We're doing pretty good once a person is inoculated. And I think there's a lot of disagreement about that.
Oh, absolutely. And if you look at just those two facts, not counting the vaccinated breakthrough cases and changing the cycle of PCR tests for vaccinated versus unvaccinated, it would seem that those two false facts alone would explain the government's narrative that it's the unvaccinated that are causing all this.
Well, there's a little more nuance to it. When you look at the CDC's Barnstable, Massachusetts study that was just published on August 6, they confirm that in that study, that 74% of all of the people who tested positive were fully vaccinated. Now, so what they're using is this little definition of what constitutes fully vaccinated. It means that you've had either both doses of Pfizer and Moderna or one dose of the Johnson & Johnson, and it's been at least 14 days since the last inoculation. So that's what you have to do to get in that group. So that was 74% of those people tested positive for vaccine breakthrough, otherwise known as vaccine failure, in the CDC study. Again, that's Barnstable, Massachusetts. You can look up the study. It's published on the CDC's website. But when you go into and look at the nuance of it, what that means is that if a person had gotten both shots, but it had been less than 14 days, they're still counted as unvaccinated. If a person had, if they didn't know the vaccine status on a person, that person was counted as unvaccinated. So there's all these little ways that they're manipulating the data, and we've seen this from day one. But there's all these little ways, and when you put all these little ways together, it gives them the opportunity, like Joe Biden has said before he took office, if you want to say it like that, that they want to have the ability to turn up and turn down the dial like a volume knob on the public health situation. And that's exactly what they're doing here. In the state of Oregon, we've seen sporadic cases, which means they don't know where they occurred and should never be higher than household transmission or close contact transmission. They're saying the sporadic cases are now 10 times greater than the household transmission. So that means one of two things. That means either they're terrible at their job of contact tracing, which is possible, or it means that those are false positives. So one of the things people can do is go to the OHA's weekly report and look at where these cases are being transmitted from, and they'll see that sporadic cases just outpace every other possible site of transmission. And it's not even close. And that what that tells us is that's a dead giveaway that they're including false positives. Wow. And they've turned up the dial to make this seem much worse than it really is.
That is just horrible when it comes to governance. You know, when you're at war with a disease like this, you want good, reliable, trustworthy data. And we're not getting any of that. Let's go ahead and take a break. Coming back, something you need to be concerned about, ADE. We'll talk about that next with Dr. Henry Ely.
You're listening to the iSpy Radio Show.
And welcome back. We're talking with Dr. Henry Ely. He's the founder and executive community director of the Energetic Health Institute. We'll link that up on iSpyRadio.com. And he has been closely following COVID-19 since its beginning, having written 5 papers on it. And Dr. Ely, I want to talk to you a little bit more about the surge. And I'm really worried that what we're seeing in action is the effect of these vaccines, not the latest variant. This is an effect by the vaccines known as ADE, antibody-dependent enhancement. And this is something that we've talked previously about with Dr. McCullough, with Dr. James Lyons. These vaccines essentially make you more vulnerable, not less. And so can you talk to us a little bit about this?
Sure. Well, let me read a definition of what ADE is for the audience. Antibody-dependent enhancement occurs when the antibodies generated during an immune response recognize and bind to a pathogen, but they are unable to prevent the infection. Instead, these antibodies act as a Trojan horse, allowing the pathogen to get into the cells and exacerbate the immune response. Mm. So one of the things that's why breakthrough and really assessing breakthrough is so important, because breakthrough cases can really tell us and identify where ADE is potentially happening. So it was really unethical for the CDC to say on April 30th that they were going to stop monitoring breakthrough cases and instead just focus on hospitalizations and deaths related to post-inoculation events.
Right, because you would think they'd be more concerned about this, not less.
If the public health concern is really what they're saying is the focus, then yes, they should be. But when somebody says one thing and their actions do something different, I think what we have to start believing are the actions, not the words.
Absolutely. One of the other things too, as prepping for the show, that really surprised me is, again, this is a known effect. It's not something that just kind of came out of the blue. And people like Dr. Jack were talking about this a couple of months ago. They've known about this for years. And America's Frontline Doctors has a great video that we'll put up on iSpyRadio.com as well. That, and she was saying this back in early February, that this is a known effect of these vaccines and it's something to be concerned about. Because with the animal trials from the SARS-CoV-1 vaccine, they did well in the clinical trials. But the moment they were exposed to the actual virus out there, all of the animals died. And that's why that vaccine never came to market, and we've never seen the animal testing results from these vaccines as well. So it's definitely something to be concerned about. Moving on, though, you guys have been dealing with a grand jury. This has been a focus of yours, and you've gotten some recent developments that I'd definitely like to talk to you about. Why don't you go ahead and fill our audience in on this?
Well, for your audience, my team published a groundbreaking paper in October of 2020, showing that the CDC violated federal laws, Information Quality Act, Paperwork Reduction Act, and the Administrative Procedures Act, in manipulating the COVID data, specifically cases and especially fatalities, to the point where our assertion is that the overcounting and hyperinflation of fatalities could be as high as 94%, based upon what the CDC has admitted, that currently all of the fatalities, 94% of them had on average 4.0 comorbidities or pre-existing conditions. So what the CDC did was they de-emphasized just for COVID the comorbidities, and in doing so, it allowed them to say COVID was the cause of death when COVID wouldn't have been considered the cause of death for in any other previous year. So with that kind of manipulation, there's oversight that has to take place at the federal level, and that oversight is conducted by the Office of Management and Budget. Well, the CDC bypassed that oversight by failing to register in the Federal Register their intention to make these changes, which then also opens up public comment. So that's why we never had a chance to say anything about this, and that's why no one has ever held them accountable. So we published this. USA Today tried to take us to task, but ultimately couldn't on it. We sent this paper and a formal grand jury petition that was put together by a number of really awesome attorneys to every U.S. attorney in the country, and we got no responses on this, none. So we've been pounding the table on this some more, and we've gotten two senators to file in the state of Oregon to file this petition on our behalf. And right now I can say to the audience that that petition has been filed electronically and has been filed through snail mail. And now we are awaiting the U.S. attorney in the state of Oregon, Scott Asfog, to respond, and we're going to give him 7 days before we escalate matters on this, because the people have a right to know, the people have a right to petition, the people have a right to have a say in their own governance, and that's something that we continue to see eroded by Governor Brown, who was just deplorable, in my opinion, in what she said about Superintendent Mark Thielman, and who is a father of a special needs daughter, and how she called him out, in a veiled threat in a letter this week. I was just really disgusted by that, especially when he's been working so hard to collaborate with the powers that be to help see Oregonians through this crisis.
Okay, so lots to unpack there. You said that this was a violation of the Federal Register. Is that a violation of law, or is that simply being sloppy? If it is a violation of law, what would be the punishment for that?
It's definitely a violation of law to fail to report any intended changes in data collection, data analysis, and data publication. That's under the Information Quality Act. It is definitely a violation of federal law. The Paperwork Reduction Act is what makes it mandatory for every federal agency to submit any proposed changes to the Federal Register to open up public comment and federal oversight of those changes, because we have to make sure that somebody's, watching over these agencies so that they don't do something corrupt, right? And so there, the process in place is really simple. An agency is required by federal law to say when they're going to make any changes that they propose the changes and open up public comment and oversight. The CDC failed to do this, and they're trying to fall back on, which they don't have any legal standing on, is that it was an emergency and everything was in a rush and we did the best thing to do. No, the emergency does not supersede our Constitution or our existing federal laws.
Mm. Well, this is the same kind of game that we have seen played with environmental studies, with environmental law, and with global warming and whatnot. So it doesn't come as a big surprise that they did that, but it's still shocking when you hear about it. Let's go ahead and take a break there. Coming up, some solutions for you to protect yourself, whether or not you've had the vaccine, and perhaps especially if you've had the vaccine. More with Dr. Ely. circle back on our Faust segment. Now we're talking with Dr. Henry Ely. He is the founder and executive committee director of the Energetic Health Institute based in Portland. You can find out more about them by heading to energetichealthinstitute.org. Lots of great information there, especially their page there on COVID. And so, you know, in that last segment, people may be concerned when they hear about things like ADE and that taking the vaccines could make them more vulnerable in some ways. And we don't want to alarm people. We want to alert people and we want to bring them solutions. And Dr. Peter McCullough, perhaps the nation's foremost leading expert on COVID, Dr. Zeb Zelenko, who treated President Trump, Dr. Michael Yeadon, who was the former VP of vaccine development at Pfizer, they've all said the same thing, that COVID-19 is, quote, the most treatable respiratory viral illness ever if you address it early. And that's probably a real shock, considering that we have locked down the entire nation, and yet it's the most treatable respiratory viral illness ever. What are your thoughts? Would you agree with that assessment?
My clinical experience supports exactly what they say. We right now, for the people that I've worked with directly and the cases I've been able to consult on, which is now we're over a couple hundred of those at this point, we have 100% recovery rate. And the key is getting people, I think there's one thing I would add to that. The key is to make sure people are practicing preventative measures to before they even potentially get infected. And that's where we have talked openly about vitamin D3, vitamin C, vitamin A, and zinc. And we offer people suggestions on what we think those amounts should be on a daily basis on the website at the Energetic Health Institute. When you have people who are taking proactive preventative measures, and then when we engage in a really thorough early treatment, you know, we've seen doctors. One of the really big points of consternation for me still is that doctors are not testing for vitamin D levels upon admission into hospitals. It's driving me up the wall, because what we're seeing is that if they would just test for vitamin D, they'd probably see that their patients are in the teens or lower in terms of vitamin D levels, and we need them at 55 or higher. So that tells us something that we can do to help that patient and accelerate recovery and clear that bed for the next person that might be coming in. So there's ways when you practice early treatment, what you're effectively doing is giving the patient not only the best chance for rapid recovery, but you're also taking the burden off the healthcare system. And so it has a very important dual role. And that's where I was very happy to see that the FLCCC and Pierre Corey had just updated their protocols on ivermectin and also included something very important for your listeners. IVs, nutrient IVs. One of the things that we're seeing for outpatient home care is that if you can call in a mobile IV to come out and give you a IV drip of a Myers cocktail with a glutathione push, that it's having miraculous impacts in terms of accelerating and recover and speeding up recovery for people who are going in the wrong direction.
So just to reiterate for people, D and C are really important to help boost your immune system to begin with. But then Dr. Zev, I mean, part of his protocol adds zinc and quercetin. Mm-hmm. And I found it really interesting, his discussion on zinc. He puts it this way, is that zinc blocks viral replication. It inhibits an enzyme called RNA-dependent RNA polymerase, RDRP. He calls that the most important enzyme in the body, that because it will actually stop the virus from making copies of itself. But zinc doesn't get into the cells on its own, and that's why you need a delivery system, whether it's HCQ or, if you can't get that, quercetin. That was really interesting that the zinc can actually stop the viral replication.
Right. It's amazing how equipped our body is to handle even this man-made situation.
Yes.
But it does need the nutrients, the vitamins and minerals to be able to do that. And what we've known for over 20 years, thanks to the CDC's reporting on this, is that Americans are severely deficient in these key nutrients. So it makes sense to say, let's get these people, get our fellow Americans these nutrients. Let's spend our taxpayer dollars on that.
Well, and it's shocking, too, that it's such a simple solution to an enormous problem that we have created, where we have upended society, closed businesses, some of them permanently, ruined people's lives. Some people have died over this, all because we wouldn't look at these simple solutions. That's really horrifying when you look back at that.
We've been trying to urge and cajole and collaborate with the OHA and the governor's office since June 30th of last year to convince them about the importance of issuing statewide guidance here in Oregon for nutritional guidelines to help prevent and to help act as early treatment to assist our frontline healthcare workers.
Is there any normal reason why they would not want to do that?
I cannot speak for what their motives are, but what I can say is that their actions are disgusting, in my opinion.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. So in terms of that, the protocol, taking zinc and quercetin and all that, you should always be taking vitamin C and D and the others. But in terms of especially the zinc and the quercetin, do you need to take that on a daily basis or simply when you feel that you're coming down with something?
Definitely you want to take these things on a daily basis. I think if somebody was saying they need a day off because people get, you know, pill fatigue, of course, then I would say take it 5 to 6 days a week, take one day off a week. But you need to take it consistently because we need to maintain solid blood levels for it.
Yes. So real quick, you had teased us last time that you were doing a study about the vaccines and that for people that have gotten concerned and you know, you've got these particles in you, is there any way to get that out? Can you give us a quick update on that?
Yes. Well, first of all, anybody who has gotten inoculated and has contracted it, which we're hearing more and more cases of, my phone is blowing up now with this, is that, yes, there are things you can do. And it starts with the nutrients that we've already mentioned. But this is where good fasting comes into play for people. So one of the things that we're encouraging people to do is get into intermittent fasting. We just did a show on it yesterday that's going to air on Saturday. And we also are encouraging people to get to talk with their healthcare providers about doing 3-day water fasting, because what this seems to do is to turn off the mRNA sequences, allow the body to get rid of them, and also to start the detoxification process for any of the other ingredients that we may be unaware of, but that are in the inoculations.
Well, I really love that there are solutions out there. And Dr. Ely, we always appreciate talking to you. Thank you so much for joining us today.
All right. Thanks for having me.
A quick programming note. We are going to be off the next 2 weeks, but we will be back at it the weekend of September 11th. The Gathering of Eagles is that same weekend. Taking Back Oregon is the focus this year. It kicks off at 10 a.m. and goes till 3:30. Speakers on getting critical race theory out of schools, election integrity, and a governor's candidate forum. Mark Thielman will be one of those. I hope to see you there. You can find out more about those, along with the websites for our guests, on iSpyRadio.com and look for this week's show page. Read those, share those, use those, because as we say every week, the best information does you no good if you don't use it. Reagan, what do you think?
I do not believe in a fate that will fall on us no matter what we do. I do believe in a fate that will fall on us if we do nothing.
It's more than a show. It's self-defense. The I Spy Radio Show.